Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at something really crucial, justice within the armed forces. For a long time, this was seen as, well, a bit of a closed loop, right? An internal system.
Exactly. Often perceived as quite insular.
But that's changed significantly. We're here to unpack India's Armed Forces Tribunal, the AFT. We've got a stack of key sources, and this deep dive is essentially your shortcut to understanding how the AFT brought independent judicial oversight into military justice.
And it was a really necessary shift. I mean, our sources make it clear that before the AFT, impartiality was a major concern. There's a landmark Supreme Court case from 1982, L.T. Kulprithi Pal Singh Bidde.
Yes, I remember that one.
Where the court explicitly called the lack of an independent forum a glaring lacuna, a major gap in a democratic setup. That judgment really laid the groundwork for creating the AFT. It set the stage for trying to ensure better fairness for service personnel.
Okay, so you have this big push from the Supreme Court. How did the AFT actually get set up to tackle those gaps? What was its sort of mission?
Well, it was given this really interesting dual mandate. First, it acts as a specialized, hopefully speedier place for dealing with service matters. You know, things like pay disputes, pension issues, promotions.
The kind of things that used to clog up the regular high courts.
Precisely. Takes that burden off them. And second, maybe even more importantly, it became the very first independent judicial body to hear appeals against court-martial verdicts. That means it can look at the whole case, again, the facts, the law, a full review. That's a huge step for accountability.
And what's really interesting, as you mentioned, is the structure of the AFT itself. It's a kind of hybrid court, isn't it? Tell us a bit about that composition.
Absolutely. What's fascinating here is how the benches are set up. They have both a judicial member that's a retired high court judge and an administrative member.
And the administrative member is military.
Yes, a retired senior military officer, like a lieutenant general or equivalent. This blend is pretty vital. It ensures you get the legal rigor from the judge, but also, you know, a real practical understanding of military life, the context, the environment, which is crucial for making fair decisions in these specific situations.
Right. That makes sense. You need both perspectives. Okay, so let's make it practical. If you, our listener, are a service member or maybe a veteran, how do you actually use the system? What's the process?
For the individual, it's much clearer now. There's a codified process. You can file different types of applications, maybe an original application if it's about your pension, for instance, or an appeal if you're challenging a court-martial decision against you.
Okay.
And here's something really significant, especially for retired personnel. You can now file your case at the AFT bench that covers the area where you ordinarily reside.
Ah, the mother AFT concept.
Exactly. That's not just about convenience, though it certainly is convenient. It fundamentally opens up access to justice. It breaks down those geographical hurdles that used to stop people from even trying.
That really does sound like genuine progress. But, you know, any system like this runs into challenges. What have been some of the big wins for personnel, and what are the persistent hurdles the AFT still faces?
Well, that accessibility definitely ties into some key judicial developments. The AFT, and actually the higher courts too, have developed a pretty pro-personnel approach in certain areas, especially disability pensions. There's a very powerful Supreme Court judgment from 2013, Dharamveer Singh. Heard of that one?
Vaguely. Refresh my memory.
It essentially flipped the script. It established a strong presumption. If you were fit when you joined the service, any disability that develops later is presumed to be connected to your service.
Ah, so attributable to or aggravated by service.
Precisely. Unless the military can strongly prove otherwise. The burden of proof shifted. That was a game changer for veterans fighting for their benefits.
Okay, that's a major win. But what about the downsides, the challenges?
Yeah, there are definitely challenges. Despite a generally decent rate of disposing cases, the AFT is struggling with a growing backlog.
Why is that?
It seems to be largely down to persistent vacancies. Not enough judicial and administrative members appointed, or delays in appointments. That obviously slows everything down.
Right. Manpower shortages hit everywhere.
And another big issue, one the Supreme Court itself has commented on quite critically sometimes, is the government's tendency to appeal AFT decisions, especially when the decision favors the service member.
So the government appealing against its own tribunal's findings.
Yes, routinely. It often drags individuals into really long, drawn-out legal battles going up to the Supreme Court, which, you know, kind of undermines the whole point of the AFT being a speedy, specialized forum.
That does seem counterintuitive.
But importantly, there's a constitutional safety net here. A very significant Supreme Court judgment in 2023, Union of India v. Purushottam Das. This ruling basically overruled an earlier decision and firmly stated that high courts do have the power to review AFT orders under Article 226, judicial review.
So ensuring there's always another layer of judicial scrutiny possible.
Exactly. It reaffirmed that judicial review is part of the basic structure of the Constitution. It's a fundamental safeguard.
Okay, so let's bring this together. The AFT clearly represents a really significant step forward for military justice in India. It's embedded fairness and independent oversight into what was, for a long time, a very closed system. It really feels like part of the country's broader democratic evolution, wouldn't you say?
It absolutely is. But let me leave you with a final thought to chew on. We see the AFT's crucial role. We see this pro-personnel trend in some areas of law. But how does the military justice system really deliver that speedy, impartial justice it was set up for, especially if you still have systemic problems like these manpower shortages, and if the government itself frequently challenges the tribunal's decisions? What more needs to happen, to truly solidify justice within the barracks for the long haul?